Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Mac Show. I'm Jeff Gamet, and I was going to make I'm a Ewan Rankin stand-in proxy joke, but I'm not. So instead, I'll say I actually am Ewan Rankin. I have killed Jeff Gamet. I'm wearing his skin. Put the potion on her against the hose again. Hey, we've got a great panel here today, and probably a lot of apologies on my part. Just so everyone knows, Ewan is out for the next few weeks because his schedule has gone absolutely bonkers on him. So good for Ewan. Ewan, we'll miss you while you're gone. And we're looking forward to seeing you when you can get back. In the meantime, we will do our best to make the show carry on and see if we can keep this thing from burning to its foundations. Yeah, we'll see what happens. All right, amazing panel today. Patrice, how are you?
You sure about the amazing panel part? I'm not so sure. I'm doing okay. It's like I'm good. It's been busy week. I just woke up from a nap. I'm probably a little bit loopy, so that might work out or it might not.
I think this sounds perfect. Absolutely perfect. And I'd like to point out that Patrice, you are the token EU resident on American show today.
Yeah, EU resident with an American flag in the background.
So
welcome to the American Tech Network.
Yes. Yes, our plan for global domination is progressing nicely. Wow, apparently I need some more tea this morning. Dave, how are you doing?
Doing good. Recovering from a support call. When you see a malware comes up on a Mac, you kind of get scared, but turned out to be a false positive. But other than that, I'm glad it's Friday. I'm always glad to be here.
And it's great to see you. Chuck, how are you doing?
I'm great, Jeff. And I have to say that anytime you're on a panel or hosting, it's an amazing panel. So we're a shoo-in right there.
Yeah. I'm taking that as an awesome compliment for everyone that's on the panel.
Okay.
Everyone here is awesome.
Well, you're the host, so you have the right to accept on our behalf. So yeah.
Most.
Yeah. So on behalf of everyone on the panel, thank you.
On behalf of me, you're welcome.
Awesome.
And Patrice, by the way, thank you for the American flag. We appreciate your support.
You're welcome.
Seriously, we need all the support we can get. Okay, so it's the Mac show. We should probably talk about some Mac news. Let me grab the first link that I have for...
And let's just mention for everybody... There's absolutely almost nothing going on. Like, we had a hard time finding anything worth talking about. So
that's true. If you're watching the live stream before we started the show, there's a good chance that you're sitting there wondering if we were just going to start making stuff up to have something to talk about.
Yeah.
It's the dog days of Apple. It's like the dog days of summer.
Yeah. All right. Well, out of these dog days, we did scrounge up something to talk about, and this is Apple's proposed settlement for the App Store class action lawsuit on behalf of developers. So Apple has proposed the changes that they will make to the App Store to make it better from their perspective, and to appease developers from their perspective. And looking through what they're announcing, am I missing something? Because I'm not feeling like they're actually really changing anything. It feels like they're announcing good news. We've changed everything. And then they just copy and pasted what they do.
Yeah, it's, I mean, that they basically did the absolute minimum of like making this lawsuit go away. I'm not even sure it's the minimum because I mean, we'll see whether the judge actually accepts it. But it's like, I mean, like they talk about App Store Search and they basically say you're never going to keep App Store Search. I'm like, okay, sure. Not that App Store Search is all that great and like people are happy with it, but yeah, sure, awesome. Like, what was the alternative? You're not doing search anymore?
They could have renamed it to something else and then said it was new.
Yeah. Dockpile. Like,
there was a search engine named Dogpile, wasn't there?
Yeah, I think so.
Oh, that's why they had to leave it as Surge. They didn't want to pay to use the trademark.
They're going to maintain the small business program for another 3 years. I think Apple was planning on doing that anyway. So
right.
Awesome. Sure. Yes. Great. There will be more price points available for developers, which is a change. Like, technically, it's a change.
Yeah, you're right. Technically, it's a change.
Sorry, Jeff, go ahead.
No, it's all you, Chuck.
Well, so is, if I'm reading it right, that developers can use communications such as email to share information about payment methods outside of their iOS app. That to me felt like a big concession because that was absolutely verboten before.
On one hand, I see that as a big concession. And on the other hand, I see it as the absolute minimum concession they can possibly make.
Yeah. Oh, don't forget, they got the Epic trial still going on. So one of the biggest thing was what Epic was going outside the App Store, but very little of a concession for this case.
Basically, what Apple is saying is, well, you collected the email addresses and you can use it however you want.
I guess the way I'm looking, first of all, it is a small thing. It's a small and a big, but it's small in what they could do from that perspective. And so this is maybe the first step. And if the judge comes back and says, I need more, well, then Apple has more to give as opposed to just slapping it all down there. So from a negotiation standpoint, if this turns into a negotiation, it's not a bad thing, but it still is a change.
Yeah. That's a good point. When you're negotiating, especially on this scale, you don't come in and offer what you're willing to do. You lowball, and then you negotiate up to something between what you lowballed with and what you're willing to do. And then if you end up just capped out at what you were willing to do anyhow, you still haven't lost.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
It's you're right. It does make sense, but it's still. I mean, if you lowball it to a point that it's basically doing nothing, there's a risk that you're just gonna alienate the other side, or in this case, the judge, and simply saying, "I mean, you're a big company. You could have done more, and you basically told me you're not doing anything. So, screw you. Now I'm deciding, and that could backfire."
Sure. Mm-hmm. Sure. But as David said, the Epic trial is going on, and that was kind of a key piece of it. So now Apple has kind of addressed this. I see your point, Patrice. Mm-hmm. You know, so it almost depends on what perspective you're looking at that change from.
Yeah, and to be like completely transparent, most of the things that Apple announced here are US only. So they're not even talking about any developer anywhere else in the world. They're saying, well, like basically for this lawsuit, like anybody in the US because of this lawsuit will get some things. Everybody else is like, we don't care about. So I'm not sure the message Apple is trying to send here to like towards maybe the Epic lawsuit and the other ones that are going on is all that strong.
It doesn't feel like a strong positive message, even though Apple is of course spinning it that way. It does feel like a strong message though. And that message is, look, we don't really want to screw with what we're doing with the App Store and developers. So this is what we'll do to just make all of you people shut up and go away. Now, so on one hand, that is very frustrating. But on the other hand, it's also just business. And we have this problem where we look at Apple differently than we look at many other companies, where people look at Apple sort of like their friend, and their which is bad, because Apple isn't our friend. Apple is a publicly traded company. Very massive company, yes. And and Apple's responsibility is to responsibly manage their money and to generate profit for shareholders. And the way they do that is by creating products and services that we want to buy. So that's a very pragmatic way to look at it.
That's a very pragmatic and very rational view. And the like less rational and less pragmatic view is Apple just doesn't see this as something they should be doing, and they're doing the absolute minimum they can to make this go away.
Well, but right back to it, it's business. I mean, okay. What Jeff said is not necessarily pragmatic. It's also realistic. You know, so the intersection of those two.
They could have done more.
Oh, of course.
They for sure could have done more. If they were really concerned about the small developers, if they were really concerned about their public image, if they were really concerned about anything, they could have done much more. I mean, they're basically offering a little bit money. There's like this small developer assistance fund, which is basically a settlement. Like, you just get a little money. It's like, yeah. I said, it's kind of Apple making this go away with basically no effort at all.
Mm-hmm. Well, if it goes away.
Yeah. If it goes away. Yeah. I mean, if the judge agrees, we'll see about that.
Yeah, it's a big thing. Does the judge agree? Yeah.
Jeff, I wanted you're a developer, or wear a developer hat at times. I need to have this one explained to me. Apple will also expand the number of price points available to developers for subscriptions, in-app purchases, and paid apps from fewer than 100 to more than 500. Developers will continue to set their own prices. So this is something I was not aware of. I guess that if I decide to put something in the App Store, I only have different increments that I can charge for.
Yeah, that's pretty much it.
Okay, so, I did not know that. So now Apple's going to have a whole lot more price points for everything that you can choose from. And you know, I kind of like that idea, because I've said for a long time that in so many cases, especially with subscriptions, that if you could make subscriptions, if you offer me subscriptions that are cheap that I kind of forget about, I'll pay a lot less attention to them and just let them go, as opposed to, you know, having that bill pop up every week, month, year, whatever, and have it give me an automatic reminder, gee, am I really using that or not? Mm-hmm. You know, now I'll look at it, and if it's below my whatever my threshold is, whether that's 99 cents or $4.99 or whatever, now it's like, yeah, that's, you know, that's a drink at lunch, the heck with it, you know, I'll just let it go.
Yeah, the additional price points I think actually is really a good thing. So this is one positive coming out of here. What I see this doing for a lot of developers is giving them that pricing flexibility that they need. There are some developers that are in a position where the price point that they had to choose for their product is lower than what it should be.
Yeah.
Because the next price point is much higher than they feel like they can charge for the product. So they end up.
Or it gives you the flexibility. Like, let's say your price is $9.99 a month. Sometimes like you want to offer a special pricing, and maybe like $7.99 or $6.99 is too small. And if there is an increment in between, like you can go a little bit lower without going, like, especially in the lower price points where it's like 99 cents, 199, 299. Like if you go from $299 to $199, that's a third of your price basically you're slashing. That might be a little bit too much. But if you can do, I don't know, $249, for example, then that might be a little bit better. So it gives you a little bit flexibility also in your marketing to say, hey, like without giving away basically half of your product, you can say, okay, I can do like a 10-20% off thing.
Mm-hmm. Patrice, you went right where I was going because I was thinking also of sales that, you know, okay, I could run a sale for so many days, so many weeks, mm-hmm. so many hours for that matter. I don't know exactly how that works because I'm not a developer, but I would have the option even more so. Because right now I know that there are times that I see apps on sale in the App Store and it's like, okay, great. And sometimes they represent them as limited time and yet they mm-hmm. seem to be there forever. And so again, not knowing the mechanics of that, but just this just felt like it's giving the developers a lot more flexibility. And so and sales is one of the things, yeah, that I see that as a very good thing. But I'm intrigued that it was fewer than 100 and they're now going to have more than 500 price points. I mean, but from an accounting standpoint, that's got to be a bit of a nightmare.
Yeah, quite a bit.
I mean, for the most part, it's probably a nightmare when you have to pick the price points because you have to have a list of 500 items instead of 100. Yeah. I mean, I don't remember what the range is. I mean, the lowest is, other than free, the lowest is, I think, 99 cents. And I think $999 is the upper limit, if I remember correctly.
So, that sounds right.
Yeah. So, I mean, that and probably like between $1 and $100 are probably the majority of prices, because that's usually the range most apps are in. So what mm-hmm. I'm guessing is that they might do like a few extra points in that range, and then bit like over $100, there will be more options. Like so, especially for the professional.
It's so, confusing.
Yeah, totally. Yeah, as I said, I mean, I can understand to some extent why Apple did it, but I'm wondering like why not just let the developer pick a number. I have a suspicion why they did it that way, because you have to think about other currencies, mm-hmm. and that gets really complicated. I mean, right now basically Apple can offer a chart and say, okay, it's gonna be, I don't know, 99 cents in the US and 79 pence in the UK and whatever, 99 euros, whatever it is, like something like that. If you have an arbitrary value, they could still give you a chart. You enter a value and they just calculate it and say, okay, it's going to be this.
Right. I think part of Apple's restrictions on pricing comes from Apple's long-standing desire to be in complete control. Mm. And if you have a bunch of apps listed on a page and you're seeing prices and it looks like a price list from products in Walmart where it's just like all over the place, that doesn't look good. Like optically, that doesn't look good. Mm-hmm. But if everything falls within these preset parameters where prices are the same, they all look alike and everything, that's much cleaner. And I mean, because ultimately you could say, sure, any price you want, and then the back end just has a calculator that's doing the price conversions for mm-hmm. other currencies on the fly.
Yeah, but that would probably mean that they would like, it would be, I don't know, 77 cents in the UK, for example, or pence.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe, and that maybe doesn't,
and that's
look
not
as,
pretty
as
and
good.
Clean the no. way Apple likes it.
Yeah,
that's
true. Yeah. Oh. So that makes, to some extent, makes sense.
All right. So I want all of you to put on your legal expert hats or robes, I suppose, in this case. Do you think Apple's proposed settlement is going to fly?
No. I think the judge is going to push back.
I would be surprised. I think that, I don't know that he'll reject everything outright. I think there will be some pushback just because that's the way these things work.
I could put on my cynical hat and say, they might change the payout on the like the small developer program. So that might be a little bit pushback, but nothing major is going to change. Like the number might change here and there, and that's it.
Patrice, you're more in line with my thinking. As it is today, that's not what's going to get approved for the final settlement. But but I think what will get approved will not be significantly different from what is proposed today.
Right. So I want to go back just for a second to the search question, because I'm rereading this again. And this is interesting. At the request of developers, Apple has agreed that its search results will continue to be based on objective characteristics like 1, 2, 3, 4, et cetera, et cetera. So, I mean, how do you guys feel? Did developers request this? Are developers concerned that if they don't keep things like download star ratings, text relevance, and user behavior signals, that Apple would be free to say, hey, if you want on the front page of the App Store, you're going to pony up a little cash? Mm-hmm. So, I mean, do you think that was something that at the request of developers?
Well, maybe not officially at the request of developers, but developers have been very vocal about wanting to make sure that search results are fair and are actually usable. Yeah. And what we have right now with the system where you can buy an ad and have your app show up above the app someone is actually searching for is a point of contention for developers. So seeing that erode into something that is even worse for discoverability, that's something that I've seen developers complaining about and concerned about for a while.
App Store results have gotten worse and worse over time. I mean, we've complained about it on the show quite a couple of times. I see this phrasing as something, it's an Apple, very Apple phrasing to say, well, developers have requested that we keep it that way. But in reality, what probably happened in the background was people were developers were complaining about the App Store results. And Apple said, look, I mean, we can make it worse. So we can keep the status quo if you want to, but if you don't, then we'll just make it worse.
Oh my God, this is their Darth Vader moment.
Yeah.
They changed the terms of the agreement. Pray I don't change it more.
Well, it says the agreement will keep the current App Store search system in place for at least the next 3 years. So, you know, is that a compromise on Apple's part? You know, that because from what you're saying, if that's the case, this takes potential money out of Apple's pocket because mm-hmm. they won't be able to charge as much or charge for those ads. So that may be, we were kind of complaining about this before, but that may be more of a concession on Apple's part than we think.
Yeah, you're right, probably. On the other hand, how much money is it really? Especially for a company as big as Apple.
And I don't buy that, Patrice. I hate that phrase. Every time somebody says, well, for a company as big as Apple, they have so much money in the bank. It's still money. Yeah. It's still cash flow. You got to look at the current results.
Yeah, I mean, yes and no. There is definitely, I mean, also my experience, there is a difference how a company internally sees certain budget items when you have a certain size. Like a small company, a small startup, like if you talk about, I don't know, investing $100 in something, they're going to say, yeah, okay, let's see. I mean, we have to make that back and that might be challenging. Whereas like a bigger company like ours or like Apple, like for them, giving away $100,000 or $1 million or $10 million is like, yeah, I mean, sure, at the end of the day, it adds up and I don't think they want to. But for them, it's more of a possibility. They can give away $10 million on search revenue, and it's not going to make a damn difference in their bottom line at all. That's like a rounding error for them. So there is, I get where you're coming from, and I agree. Sometimes it's it's a little bit overplayed, but I think in this case, especially in negotiation, Apple simply is in a position where they can give away money and look like they're giving away money and it not mattering all that much to them.
And I guess I look at it, I mean, without intending to insult you, that sounds like congressional thinking right now, especially in the US. You know, a billion here, a billion there, pretty soon you're talking about real money. You know, I don't know what what the numbers are for that advertising revenue, but at the end of the day, it does add up. And so if you start, and the thing that bothers me the most about this kind of discussion is that we say, oh yeah, well, okay, they can give up 10 million in ad revenue here, and they can give up 10 million in ad revenue over there, and they can give up, you know, they can cut the price of the iMac so that, you know, they don't make the profit margin that they've been making. And everybody has their pet thing that they want Apple to compromise on because they've got so much money.
So what? I mean, they have so much money. Apple's in the business to make a profit. I mean, regardless of they have $1 trillion or $1 million, I mean, they have to keep and maintain their profitability, and it's especially if they're responsible to the stockholders. I mean, the stockholders are most important to them. I mean, as well they should be.
Yeah, but there's a reason. There's a reason why, for example, GDPR violations are a percentage of your revenue. Because if you just say, well, I don't know, a violation is $10,000 or euros or whatever, that's it. For one company, that's basically killing the company, and for another company, it's not. Like, it's basically, as I said, it's like cash that they found somewhere in the sofa cushion. So I mean, you're right. It adds up, and like Apple can't just give away money all the time because, then they don't have a business. But they can, as I said, in situations like this, they can do it and look like a really benevolent company, when in reality, it's not that much of a difference for them. Because they can find another place to make up for it, simply.
Yeah, and I think we're going back and forth. And the point, I think it's the bottom line point, is that there's a balancing point. There's a balancing point when giving something away is good business. And when, you know, it's not good business. And so, you know, where is that in this situation? And right now, none of us have any numbers. So we don't know whether the ad revenue we're talking about is $10,000 or $10 million or somewhere in between or above or below. So, you know, we're arguing in a vacuum here, but I do think the balance thing is, you're absolutely right, Patrice. You know, you can look good, or there are compromises you can afford to make depending on what your bank account is.
Well, in this case, if I'm interpreting this correctly, Apple's not actually changing what they're doing with the ad system they have in place for at least 3 years. So that means that they're not reducing potentially income from the way that advertising is handled on the App Store, but they're not changing it to increase it in a different way. There will be some natural increase in ad revenue through the App Store simply because it's an ongoing platform that is growing. So as you get more apps on there, you end up getting more companies buying ads. So this concession isn't Apple giving up money, because what they have presumably is making some amount of money for them. And I'm sure that they have a numbers spreadsheet. Some that better be numbers. Can you imagine if they're doing it in Excel or Google Sheets? So they have a numbers spreadsheet somewhere where they're looking at what they're making with ads right now, what they project to be making with ads over the next 3 years, and what they project they could make if they were to change the way they did it. And when they looked at all the numbers, they're like, okay, we're okay with the numbers by saying for 3 years we won't change this, but we're also setting up our out so that it won't be a surprise when we do change the way we handle advertising to increase revenue.
Yeah, they have 3 years to prepare for it.
Right.
Can you imagine, like, they have probably an Apple II or something somewhere, or like an original Macintosh with the original Lotus version 1, 2, 3. Of Excel? No, it's like the original of Excel.
Or maybe an Apple II with VisiCalc.
Yeah, oh, that could also be. Yeah, that's how they're doing all this. They're all their like spreadsheets and whatever.
Yeah, and at some point, they'll be like, you know, we need to get an Apple IIgs because the processor in the Apple II we're using can't count high enough anymore.
Yeah, that's spreadsheet is stupid.
So we need to go to a 16-bit processor.
There's an idea.
Yeah, and based on what I'm seeing in the chat room, apparently Chuck IOU and maybe Bob Beach an apology for opening up the old wound of Lotus 1-2-3. Do you remember the box that came in? I mean, that was like bigger than a cereal box, an American cereal box. That was a huge box.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, you could hurt yourself with the manual.
Mm-hmm. You could. And how many disks was that? It was like a fistful of floppies to install, as I recall.
Oh, I think we have a show title right there.
Fistful of floppies. Okay, so if nothing else has come out of the show today, at least we figured out what the title will be. All right. So I'm going to toss another story out for us to talk about. And this is the speculation on what Google is paying to stay the default search engine in Safari through the end of this year?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that number, each year.
That number is $15
billion.
Yeah.
And that is a point where it makes a significant difference in Apple's budget or in Apple's revenue. I mean, sure, they make how many hundred billion a year? But 15 billion like is
all
a lot.
All the billion?
All the billions, yeah. But 15 billion is a lot.
Yeah,
that's probably also the reason why they still have it. Yeah. Mm-hmm. No, I mean, that is 16 Instagrams, right?
That is 16 Instagrams.
Yeah.
Yes.
Think about it.
Okay. So now in 2022, Google is projected to be paying between 18 and 20 billion for the honor of being the default search engine.
I mean, it makes absolute sense for Apple because as they say in an article here, it's most popular search engine. DuckDuckGo is out there and many others, but how do you not acknowledge that? It just doesn't make any sense at all not to do it. And hey, kudos to Apple, that there's their income right there. For Google, it's not even really, it's probably just a small little speck of affecting their profits because the benefits they're getting on from knowing every iPhone that's out there and being able to get all the search information they need, and they can get their ads that way. Yeah,
they serve the ads based there. Yeah.
Yeah. So I mean, it definitely is in Google's complete benefit. That's why they don't even question it. They just pay it.
Mm-hmm. No, I mean, if Google wasn't making the money back, they would have stopped that long time ago.
Right.
Like.
What? Sorry. Go ahead, Patrice.
No. It may. I mean, I'm pretty sure Apple is like feeling at least a tiny little bit ambivalent about it. With all their privacy stance and whatever. But I mean, it's probably like 5 seconds and like, oh, but we're getting 18 billion for it. Okay. Yeah, works.
I don't know.
The
I
mean, price
I
look is at right.
This, yeah, well, the price is right. I look at this as a win-win because Google gets, Google makes a lot off of this. Apple obviously makes a lot off of this.
For sure.
And this is why they have the money in the bank. This is why. Mm-hmm. We're no longer paying for operating system updates, and why Apple can offer a lot of things that they do as part of their platform is they've built this platform, they have something to sell. The privacy question is kind of a good one. I mean, because if you are doing a Google search on something, I guess you are giving Google that information, but you'd be giving. Just by the nature of it, you'd be giving that information no matter what search engine you were using. So you're giving it, you're having to give it to somebody.
Exactly.
You, I mean, you, even DuckDuckGo. DuckDuckGo is still going to know that I'm on a Macintosh or I'm on whatever, but more importantly, that I'm searching for, you know, a recipe for beef brisket, or I'm searching for, you know, leather shoes, or, you know, whatever crazy thing I'm searching for. And so, you know, and Google, I firmly believe Google does not want this relationship to go anywhere. Ooh, that they want to hang on to it. And so whatever the bounty is, they will pay it.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, as I said, there's probably a point where it's not worth it to Google. Like, if it gets too expensive and they can't make it, like, back. But as Bob Beach said in the chat room, I mean, unless Google is behaving completely irrationally, from an economical sense, they're making that back and then some, because, like, that's what a business does.
That's what a business does.
Yeah, and I mean, we know Google is making a lot of money, too, so it's not... So that they're losing money.
And it's information that Apple is not in a position to monetize themselves.
Right.
So, Chuck, you know,
you're bringing up a very good point. Apple's not in a position to monetize this themselves. But in a sense, they are. Yet. because they're selling it. Now, okay,
yeah,
and Dave, that's the other part of it. Yet, why has Apple not created their own search engine? And this is a question I've heard people ask a lot. And
because
and
it they doesn't say, give them, yeah, because it doesn't give them $18 billion a year.
Exactly. I mean, that's the bottom line. Apple, even though Apple is always talking about how they're all about our privacy, and Google is definitely not concerned about that because, after all, we are the product. So why is Apple not making a search engine like DuckDuckGo that is designed to protect our privacy? Well, because everything has a price. And in this case, for 2021, that price is $15 billion. And in 2022, it's between $18 and $20 billion. Yep. And it doesn't fiscally make sense for Apple to make a search engine.
Yeah. And I mean, there is a very limited amount of privacy to protect here. Because, I mean, as I think, Chuck, that's a really valid point. We're searching anyway. Like, we're using some service, whoever provides it, to search. We're giving that information to the search engine. So there is not much to protect. On the other hand, Apple can make money from it. So, like, Apple can make money from something that would, if they didn't, happen anyway.
And Apple is doing a few things to, at least superficially, help protect our privacy, like adding in the
obfuscation.
Thank you. adding in those features to Safari, to so that web servers and search engines have less information on who we are, like identifying all Apple products as a generic iMac. And and my favorite out of that is when it asks for the font list, giving a generic font list, because the fonts you have installed, the likelihood that two people have, unless they just never install any new fonts on their computer ever, the likelihood that two people have the exact same font set is almost on par with the likelihood of two people having the same fingerprints.
Yeah.
A couple things here. First of all, just to reiterate, you know, we're giving Google a very limited amount of information. If I search for shoes, I've told Google I'm interested in shoes. But if I now when I click through, then that's a whole nother matter. Now we're off and really giving Google more information about what site did I find the most interesting or relevant to my search. But at the end of the day, Google is getting that basic information, but anybody would be getting that information.
Yeah.
But I think, you know, Jeff, to your point about Apple not building a search engine, first of all, there's the ability to build a search engine. I mean, that's no small thing. And to maintain a search engine is no small thing. And then how do you monetize a search engine? Well, the best way, the most efficient way, really probably the only way, is through advertising. And then the privacy thing breaks down. So could Apple do it? Yes, but it would go way against everything that they've kind of built their business on. And I'm thinking back to what Tim Cook said in just the last earnings call when they were asked about the chip manufacturing. If they can do it better themselves, they will do it. If they can't, then they will go and hire somebody. Basically, they've hired Google for for $15 billion. I keep stumbling over billion. $15 billion to provide this part of the OS. And they really don't give away much for us as users.
No. I mean, you're right. If you think about it, I mean, sure, Google has a lot of extra businesses. But if you look at where Google is making the money and where they're spending the money and what their core business is, it's still search and it's advertisement for search. And if Apple wanted to compete with that, I mean, the advertisement side, Apple could like just throw away and say, okay, we're doing a DuckDuckGo, we're not selling anything. Apple could do that. But then they would have to make up the money somewhere else because that's not a cheap business. Like, it's not done with, like, throwing 512 Macintoshes somewhere in the corner and saying, this is done. Like, that's a massive business. I mean, the amount of computing power that Google needs to even, like, run the index and serve everybody and all of that, do the searches in a, like, efficient and fast way. There's a lot of money that goes into that. So as I said, Apple could do it in a, as I said, as a free service or like rolled it into iCloud Plus or whatever. But it would be hard for Apple to do it, and there's no reason for it.
Yeah, they don't gain that much.
No,
I mean the only thing they gained was that initial search information on shoes, and then after that, everything else is lost. Google can monetize it. It just makes sense.
Look at Apple Maps. I mean, you can still argue why Apple did it. I'm happy that they did, and I think that the world benefited from it. But from success and how much money they had to invest to make it, and they make basically nothing back. Perspective. I'm not sure how successful it really was for Apple.
Yeah, anything it did. Oh, sorry.
Yeah. Go ahead, David.
Anything that you could say out of it is it forced Google to continue to innovate, because the maps were their de facto maps for forever. They always have been, but now they've got some competition, Waze is another one, but they own Waze now. So Apple Maps is giving them competition and giving them more and more reasons to innovate. And I think both are benefiting from each other because they're both innovating on that product. Maps is so important these days.
Yeah, it is, and there is no competition. There is competition on the search engine market. It's fairly limited.
It's basically Bing,
DuckDuckGo, and Google are probably the top three. And it's basically Google, and then nothing, and then probably I don't know DuckDuckGo or Bing.
Yeah,
right.
But there's still competition.
Yeah, on the maps thing. I really like what Apple is doing with Maps, but at the same time, I don't see Maps being a true head-to-head competitor with Google Maps, at least for the near term. And the reason I say that is because I look at what each company is doing with business listings, and Apple Maps is very anemic for business listing compared to Google Maps. And part of that is because of the way Apple Maps handles business listings. Like, you have to have a physical space for your business, a storefront, an office, to be in the business listings for Apple. For Google, you don't. And in Google, you can say, here's my epicenter. And this is my range for where I conduct my business. And that's really great. Like if you do a service business, you don't have a location, but you service a location. Mm-hmm. Okay, that's another thing you can do with Google Maps that you can't with Apple. And you also have to maintain two map listings. So you have to go to Google Maps and set that up. And then you have to go to Apple Maps and set that up. And Apple, even though they have a relatively easy system for setting up your business listing, unless something goes wrong, and then just good luck with it. I don't think Apple has done a good job of making people aware of what they're offering and why it should matter. Whereas Google, I mean, they have done that. And now simply by its existence, it is advertising to the world why it's important.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, Google has a, I don't know, 10-year at least head start. And is in most heads the de facto maps app.
Sure.
And has all the business. I mean, people are aware of the listing, like the business listings in Google. And Apple has not done a good, like really good job advertising that at all. I mean, they started fairly, I mean, they started with nothing and then added it later. And it's still, I mean, it's still limited.
Mm-hmm.
And they're not, at least I'm not aware of much advertising they're doing there.
Yeah, I don't know.
It makes me feel like this is something that we're going to see down the road a little bit. Because look, let's face it, Apple Maps, if you connect to Apple Maps, Apple knows where you are. For obvious reasons, they have to.
Yeah.
Just like Google knows where you are. Mm-hmm. And now I've said this a million times. I like Apple Maps. I kind of prefer Apple Maps, except if I'm in the car, I want Waze, because Apple does not give you anybody on the road the opportunity to report road conditions, police traps, anything like that. Waze does.
Now
they do what?
Now they added that.
They have?
They recently, I don't remember, is it iOS 15 or is it already out, but it's definitely coming.
Okay.
It's either already there or it's coming. Like,
that's good. So this is scary because now I'm going to have two devices in my car, which kind of defeats it, because unfortunately Waze right now is king of the road. I mean, if you do any driving, of any significant kind, you're going to use Waze, and trying to get to that point, you know, and get beyond that is going to be a real challenge for Apple, because I drive pretty regularly to certain long distances, and you can see the police pop up and pop down, and you can see the hazards on the road, you know, pop up and pop down. There's so many people using it. And, you know, so how good is the Apple solution going to be? I much prefer the navigation and the way that Apple Maps presents, but Google gives me that information that is a bit more of an immediate need. And at the end of the day, I'm giving my location to one or the other. I'm more comfortable giving it to Apple, but in this case, the trade-off for me is well worth it in speeding tickets.
Not that I speed.
No.
Some of the features you're talking about, you know, like cameras, for example. Wow, my tea still hasn't kicked in. What's up with that?
Okay. More tea, Jeff.
More tea. So like traffic cameras, I see those in Apple Maps here in Boulder, and when I was in Minneapolis, same thing. When there were road hazards up ahead, those are showing up in Apple Maps for me. I'm not on beta on my iPhone, just to be clear. And there were several other Waze-like things that I was seeing, which for me was great, because Waze turned into such a dumpster fire for me that I actually rage deleted it during the middle of directions while I was driving on a highway one day. Okay, so here's the story for that, because why not? So I had driven to a place that I had gone many times, and every single time that I went there, Waze would tell me to turn left into the middle of a field. No road, nothing. But I knew where I was going, so I kept reporting it, and nothing ever changed. I'm heading back home this one day, and as I'm driving up I-25, it says it's changing the route to a faster route. Get off at this exit. And I'm like, oh, okay. And I can see cars up ahead. So I'm thinking, okay, this is weird. It's going to dump me like into the outskirts of downtown Denver. And then it takes me on this crazy loop down through the middle of downtown Denver, zigzagging around back to the same exit that I got off and puts me on and dumps me behind a line of cars that are stopped.
Yeah, it's awesome.
And I was like, you know what? F that. I am out. And I deleted the app right there. And I was like, done. Never again. Waze will not be on my computer, period.
Yeah, I don't like Waze either. Like it used to be good, but actually Apple Maps is really good these days.
Yeah.
By the way, I like when Cookie Monster was talking to me.
No, that's true. That's true. And by the way, I put the support article in the chat. I put the support article in chat. It's in iOS 14.5.
Yeah, thank you, Patrice. So
it just came out, basically.
Okay. That's good to know, and I will start experimenting with it. But Jeff, it's interesting to hear your story because just Monday, I was coming back from a business appointment and I had a drive of about an hour and a half. And Waze suddenly told me to get off where I would never get off. And I learned long ago, you know, in for a penny, in for a pound. So I trusted it. I got off. Mm-hmm. I have no idea. I was on back roads that I've never seen before. I've been through small towns I've never heard of before. Mm-hmm. And then eventually it brought me back to the highway. What I didn't know, and I found out later then on the evening news, was that the highway I had been on that it took me off of, there was a tractor trailer jackknife and the highway was closed for 4 hours.
Wow. Mm-hmm. Now, and see, so that's awesome that it took care of you for that.
Yeah.
And there were times where Waze totally shined, but mm-hmm. I had so many incidents like the one that made me rage quit and delete the app.
Yeah.
That happened that it wasn't worth the gamble for me because it was to the point where anytime Waze would say, hey, you should go this route instead, I would sit there and think, is it worth it to risk it? Or do I stay mm-hmm. on the path that I'm on? Because at least I know where I'm going with this one. And at that point, it's no longer a useful tool for me.
Yeah. I have like extensive like experience with Apple Maps in the Phoenix Valley. There are places there where there is no alternative route. Like if you're coming down from Flagstaff, there is no alternative route. It's going in through the middle of nowhere. There's one highway. That's it. Like if that thing is closed, then you're done. And I mean, you could go through California, but that's like, I mean, probably like a 12-hour like trip then instead of like two. So don't do that. The few times I didn't listen to it, I regretted it. It told me to reroute. I'm like, nah, I know. Like, you know how that goes. Like, you're like, oh no, I know the traffic here. Like, this is my local area. I know exactly there's nothing going on. And then you're stuck. Mm-hmm. So I learned to listen to it. And sometimes it didn't make any sense. And I was like, okay, why is it doing that? But it always, like, I always saw later why. Like, I was like, okay, yeah, there's something going on here. Or there's a construction or something I wasn't aware of. Mm-hmm. So as I said, I don't know how it is in other places, but at least in that area, it was very, very reliable.
Yeah.
Yeah. Bob Beach is making the point in the chat room that he didn't listen to Apple Maps directions once and ended up in a traffic jam. It's tough to trust either one of them when you feel like, you know, you're looking at that big, beautiful highway. And it's like, yeah, I want to go there. I don't want to go off here on these little side roads, but mm-hmm. you got to trust it. And the number of times it's worked out for me as opposed to not just makes it well worth the risk.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well,
Chuck, since you just repeat that in real life.
No, I'm going to leave that.
Oh no, Chuck, please give us your real Yoda impression.
Awesome. Okay. So I put it in the chat. I said, it can be tough to trust, but trust you should.
That was it.
No, I'm not going to try to do the voice. No,
come on.
It was much better in text than it was here, folks.
Well, in my mind, I'm hearing it, Chuck, and it is.
Yeah, me too. Yeah.
All right. So we left the rails at some point, and I don't even know when. Maybe if I'd used Waze, I would have known when we left the rails.
Okay, I brought you back. Maybe.
Ooh, yeah. Good segue, Jeff. Good segue.
Yeah, thank you. Hey, this show and all the other hold on, T. All right. This show and all the others is sponsored by TSO Hosts. And I'm glad that the company name is not difficult to say, because I'm clearly having issues with enunciation and diction today.
And it has the word T in it, right?
It has T in it, so I'm good. All right. TSO Hosts, they are awesome because they're providing the bandwidth we need to live stream our shows right off the rails every single week. They are providing us the server space we need so that all the shows we record, you can go back and watch or listen to later, which is absolutely awesome of them. And they're incredibly generous because, they're giving us all of these resources so that we can be on the air for you. They're even in the process of upgrading our servers too, which is absolutely awesome of them. So you can go to TSO Hosts and buy domains and buy hosting space if you need, and use the discount code BTN20 and you'll get a discount on that. So thank you for doing that, TSO Hosts. What they're asking from us is that we go to social media and give them some online love. And this is actually really important because this is where they get the validation for what they're doing for us beyond just that nice warm fuzzy feeling that they get in their hearts for being here for the BTN community. So hit your social media, give them some love, thank them for supporting BTN, and that will make them happy. So so go do that. Also, iMendMax supports us. English is a hard language.
Support us, they do.
Yeah,
support us, they do.
Yes, they do.
Oh, yeah, we're T. Anyhow, I'm in Max. Yeah, good people. Yeah. Okay, I'm in Max. That's the place that you want to go to get your Mac fixed, your iPhone fixed, your iPad fixed, your iPod fixed. Your Apple gear, if it is repairable, then they can dive in and work on it for you. And the great thing is that they replace components. They don't just like throw out logic boards and pop new ones in because something like a capacitor or a USB port is fried. They fix the part that's broken. That's great because we need to have our environment supporting us and keeping us alive. And the less junk we're throwing into landfills, the longer we can hopefully keep our planet alive to sustain us. So iMendMax is doing their part to make sure that you don't die. And that makes it totally worth it to go to them and have them fix your Apple gear for you. Also, Callum is an awesome guy. And the only person I want cracking open my iPads to replace the batteries. And if he were here right now, I would make a joke about wanting Callum's hands inside me just to make him feel really uncomfortable. And he's not here, so we can't do it. But one of these weeks, we'll be able to do it. Also, iMendMax, they'll sell you Apple gear if you need it. They will lease it to you if you need that. And they're absolutely awesome. Mention that you're a BTN fan and they'll give you a discount. So thank you to TSO Hosts and thank you to iMendMax for being awesome and supporting us. And Patrice, here's the part where I hand it over to you so you can tell people where to find the chat room.
Yeah, so there's the live chat room, and that is very active today, and I'm very happy about it. There's like we have Yoda competitions in there. So if you want to join that during our recordings, which is for the Mac show, it's 4 p.m. UK time. The big show, it's 7 p.m. I think, on a Thursday. Schedule is on the website, just find it. But if you want to join that, there you can just head over to chat.britishtechnetwork.com. But in case you have to work or you just can't listen, you're driving somewhere, whatever, there's a transcript and kind of our show notes, our unofficial show notes, and that you can find at britishtechnetwork.com/chat. And then you have to navigate to the 27th of August, 2021. And there you will find all the stories and all the discussions and all the cool things that we picked.
Awesome. Thank you for having my back on that part every single week. And now it's time for the cool thing. So, Patrice, what do you have for us?
So I have a really cool recipe app. And it has been a while that I've picked an app. This was in somewhere on Mac Stories, I think, a couple of weeks ago. And I've given it a try, and I've even reached out to the developer because it is, what was it, the developer of Reader, I think. The app is called Mela. I think I'm pronouncing that correctly. I don't know. It's hard to tell, but I would say Mela. But it's a really, really cool, really simple, but powerful recipe app. I've used different apps in the past, and none of them really worked all that great. But what I liked about this app is its simplicity. You basically, you can either, like in Safari, go to a website, or they have it in, like in-app browser, basically. Go to a recipe, and then it basically detects, either you share it with the extension, or in the in-app, it detects it and says, hey, there's a recipe here. And it extracts the most important things that you need, like all the ingredients and instructions and whatever, and then you can cook it. And it has like a cooking mode. It has a list of things that you want to maybe cook that you haven't done yet. It has categories, like it has all the little features that you need without being completely overwhelming, without being like super fancy or anything. It's just very good and simple, and it's a very solid app. And I don't remember how much it was, to be honest. I think it was like, was it $4.99 or something like that? It wasn't expensive. Like for what it was, I was like, I didn't even, $4.99. Like, I wasn't even thinking about it. Like it just looks good. It's simple. It gets the job done. I've shared with a couple of friends recipes now. Just sent them in messages and so on. Like it has everything, as I said, it has everything you need without being crazy overwhelmed and like chaotic. Just simple and good. And the nice thing is you can add RSS feeds, which makes sense for a developer who has an RSS reader app. You can add like your favorite recipe website, and you have the RSS feed in the app, and you can just say, oh, this looks good, I want to cook that. Which for me is the biggest benefit. I can literally just say, oh, this, yeah, I'll cook that next time. And it adds it to a list. So
nice. Yeah.
Good app.
Okay. I think I found my new recipe app.
Yeah. By the way, I think it's also available on the Mac. I didn't mention that.
Yeah, the Mac, it's $9.99 US.
Mm-hmm. Cool. Awesome. All right, Dave, what do you have for us?
I have a show that I watched a week or two ago. It is McCartney 321. That's on Hulu. Absolutely amazing show. Paul McCartney was very intimate. Rick Rubin from the one of the great producers interviewed him. Very casual. He's sitting there in his bare feet interviewing Paul, and they're sitting in front of a soundboard, and Paul just has an amazing memory and remembering all the things that the Beatles did, and they went through all the songs and mixing down the different melodies, and just it just was so immersive, and just being able to find out anything and everything you probably didn't even know about what the Beatles did and the history and all that. It was an absolutely amazing show. I highly recommend checking out McCartney 321, a great documentary. It was just released earlier this year, and well worth it. If you don't have Hulu, get a trial just to check it out. I think it was a great show, especially for those who you like the Beatles.
Awesome. All right. Well, looks like I'm doing a TV date at a friend's house.
Yep. You got Hulu? Jump on it.
Awesome. Cool. All right, Chuck, and what do you have?
That drive I was telling you about that I was making, the big detour, I was finishing up this book, this audio book. This is called The Innovators by Walter Isaacson, who was Steve Jobs' biographer. Mm-hmm. This is a fun book for a couple reasons. First of all, obviously, Apple plays a part in the story of it a little bit later, but it takes you back way beyond any of us to, you know, Ada Lovelace and how computing got started, and brings us right up through almost the present day. So it kind of crosses over from that point in your life, no matter how old you are, of being history to being, you know, borderline current events, or at least something that you remembered. It's not something that gets bogged down in a lot of details. And that's what I kind of liked it. It's not quite a 30,000 foot level. It's a little deeper than that, but they pick specific people, specific companies, specific things, and talk about them. And especially from an innovation perspective, you know, what they brought to the table. And it's not a light read. It's not a really heavy read. It's somewhere in between. I mean, it was great for a long drive, but even if you're, you know, out mowing the lawn or whatever, this is one that I think you're really, really going to enjoy, because it covers such a broad range. And I did not know that we were going to have the show title Fistful of Floppies, but it does kind of figure in there a little bit. Go and check it out if you haven't read this, The Innovators by Walter Isaacson.
Awesome. Okay.
Add it to my wish list.
Yep. All right. Wind Rider brought a cool thing for us this week, which actually is really cool. It's a website, fnd.io, fnd.io. And it lets you, I'm reading this right now, experience the App Store and iTunes anywhere. So you can search for anything on any of Apple's stores. So that's really cool.
And
it has a chart browser built in too.
Yeah, and internationally. Like you can say, I don't know, what is, like, how much is the Mela app in Germany? And you just click on Germany and there it is. It's €4.99. So
that is really cool.
Yeah, I like that.
There we go. Okay. Thank you for bringing a cool thing, Wind Rider. You rock.
Yeah, it's going to my bookmarks.
Yeah.
Yeah. This might be a new idea for the chat room to throw out weekly picks too.
Yeah, why not?
Because we're not spending enough money.
Ewan's
folks.
Not here to stop us, so it's now a thing.
Yeah.
Okay, so my cool thing is a Mac app, and it's called Quit All. And it does what the name says. It lets you quit all the running apps on your Mac. So it goes in your menu bar, and it also does more than just let you quit all the apps. So it gives you a list of all the apps that are running. You can also have it show you all of the hidden processes that are running. It will show you how much processor each app is using. You can quit or force quit individually or as groups, or quit all. And if you need to force quit something, you can do it right from the menu as well. So it's a really cool little tool that takes something we do every day and makes it more efficient and easier. And I'm actually really liking this app, and it's only $5.
That's actually pretty nice.
Yeah. And it's cool. I mean, like right now I can look and see that Audio Hijack is using 11.6% of my processor. Yeah, there we go. Yeah. Whereas OBS is using about 83% of my processor. How about that?
Not a surprise.
Yeah, Zoom, 55%. Yeah. Okay. So anyhow, Quit All. Cool little app. All right. Patrice, where can we find you?
Well, you can find me every week here on the Mac Show. Sorry, almost said Big Show. On the Mac Show every Friday. Also on the Big Show every Thursday with Jeff. You can find all the social media links and all the projects and just everything I'm doing at thepatrice.com. And yeah, if you want to listen to a podcast I'm making, that is the Foodie Flashback at foodieflashback.com. Well, I talked to really interesting people, like everybody on the panel today I've talked to, about food and just everything that goes with that.
Awesome. And Foodie Flashback is a lot of fun. And so thank you for having me on.
Thanks.
Thank you as well.
Like
Dave.
It's fun. It was fun.
Where can we find you?
Find me at In Touch with iOS at intouchwithios.com. Find me on my YouTube channel, youtube.com/DaveG65. Here on the Mac Show and on Mac Voices Live on Tuesday nights. We always have a blast there talking about all kinds of fun things in the Mac and Apple world. And I'm on Twitter at DaveG65. Great job, Jeff. Thank you.
Awesome. Thank you. And Chuck, where can people find you?
MacVoices.com is where everything links to. You can find everything all in one place. We do Mac Voices Live on Tuesday nights, 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific, whatever time it is, wherever you are. And we'd love to have you join us in the chat room. It's at youtube.com/MacVoicesTV. And I'm on pretty much all the socials that matter as at Chuck Joyner. Thanks, Jeff.
Awesome. All right. And you can find me on Twitter and Instagram. I am Jay Gamet, both places. My YouTube channel, youtube.com/JayGamet. And most Tuesdays on Mac Voices Live, Thursdays, The Big Show, Fridays, The Mac Show, occasionally on In Touch with iOS. And the past 2 weeks, I've been helping out Mac Observer because our good friend Charlotte Henry is on vacation. So I've been on a few episodes of Daily Observations, and I did Apple Context Machine this week. And Charlotte will be back at TMO next week. So then I'll be back to my normal routine of freelance writing for and content creation for other companies and making my own stuff for my YouTube channel. So, wow, this has been awesome. Thank you to all of you for being such a killer panel and once again, making my job easy. Although based on my inability to speak, you would think that this is actually really difficult, but no, that's just my problem. So seriously, thank you to all of you for being part of the panel today. And for all of you that tuned in live and are participating in the chat room, thank you for being here. All of you absolutely rock. And for everyone that tunes in later to listen or watch the recordings, thank you for being part of this as well. Every one of you, you're absolutely awesome. And have a wonderful weekend. Ewan, we miss you. We're looking forward to when you can join us again. Everyone have an awesome weekend, and we'll see you again next week.